Good to see a lot of people and young people for the Sunday school this morning. We're going to speak on this topic, and I'll go very fast so that we'll have time for your questions. What I'm going over is what we actually present in our 1.5 hour, 1 hour PowerPoint and then 30-minute questions. So we're going to boil this down, we hope, to 30 minutes, and then I cut out a lot of stuff. So this is just representative and should whet your appetite for questions if you remember something. We call it creation science, the alternative to evolution. And the verse here, Psalm 34, verse 3, "Oh, magnify the Lord with me and let us exalt His name together." And that's what our ministry does in the public schools and universities of the Philippines and Asia. And we hope someday here also in America. So we present the face that refutes evolution. We used to just compare evolution and creation models until we found out that students and faculty were confused. Which should we believe? And so we make it clear from the beginning. This is not apologetics. This is saying you should not believe in evolution. You should believe in creation. And if you don't believe in creation, you must repent. God commands all men everywhere to repent. So this is the face that refutes the fact of evolution. It's the cartoon here is a morph. You can actually put a picture of a man and a monkey together and in a computer program and come out with this. The name of this title comes from Hank Hanegraaff's title on the face that refutes the... it's something, it's a different, slightly different title, and I've adapted it for this use. Now, the face is an acrostic which represents four things about the problems of evolution evidences. The fossils, the problem with evolution evidence is that missing links are all still missing, and that's a big problem. The ape men, since there's no fossil ape men, they're fantasy or fraud. And we went over that in the message, this kind of the things that I touched on, we won't touch on here. If you haven't heard it yet, you will next hour. Change. Change is the big thing in evolution, that one animal changes into a completely different kind of animal. Well, that's not true. Science has shown that change is only within biblical kinds. And that's not the same as species or whatnot in the charts. But one kind doesn't change into another. Evidence is, for a young Earth, thousands of years, not billions of years. And that's what creation science is focusing on now. And we'll just touch on a couple of those things, and you may have questions about others. So we'll look at these one at a time. First of all, the fossils. And this is, as I mentioned, from Duane Gish, Evolution, the Fossils Say No. What are fossils and how do they form? This is sometimes, when you look at definitions of fossils in science books, it's sometimes confusing because evolutionists kind of, they don't come up with definitions that explain this. They are suddenly buried in flood conditions. Fossils are not buried slowly over millions of years like you sometimes get the concept. Because anything that dies and it's not protected, it gets eaten or it decays. And so it has to be buried quickly and so that the oxygen is cut off. There's no decay. And they're found in mass graves all over the world. Sometimes you'll find isolated fossils. But oftentimes, there's billions and billions of dead dinosaurs altogether. But most of the fossils, as you see in the background, are sea creatures. Billions and billions of sea creatures that were suddenly extinct in a flood. But then on the tops of mountains, we have other sea creatures, fish and seashells, just similar to what we have today on tops of mountains. So there are mass graves at the bottom of the ocean and on tops of mountains. Minerals replace the living tissue to form a rock replica or a copy, and that has to happen very quickly within a few days or weeks so that there's not a decay process. Here's a fossilized hat. Geologists get mad at me. They say, that's not a fossil just because it's petrified, because fossils have to take millions of years to form. I said, well, you show me a definition that demands that. This is a fossilized hat. It was a miner dropped it and it turned into a fossil. And there's many examples of that. We're just showing representatives, like here is a fish eating another fish and suddenly fossilized. Well, this one, the geologists can't argue because this is in the fossil layers. and here is one creature eating. And there are thousands and thousands of representatives of these kinds of things. Interestingly enough, not among dinosaurs in the fossil layers. But Darwin's deepest misgiving about this theory was the problem of the missing links. And he saw all these fossils and there were no in-between species. So he said, if my theory be true, then numberless intermediate varieties must assuredly have existed in his origin of species. And so his hope was that these would be found by scientists in his lifetime. But when he died, none of them had been found. He was interviewed by his spiritual advisor who asked him, and he said, oh, I'm very disappointed about that, that my theory was not confirmed. Now, he didn't give up his theory, but where are the missing links? Wanted. Transitional forms. Where would all the fishivians be? Or amphitiles, snakes growing legs or dropping their legs. Or the most famous of all, rep birds. And no. Now, scientists have, from time to time, they'll come up, they'll say, we found something, but it's a sparrow boxer. Again, these are just jokes. These are morphs because we can't imagine what they are. And when you look at an in-between species, it's so ridiculous. Or a tiger owl. Our very favorite is, oh no, not buttercat, but that's a good one. And top of catchfella, woo. So these are what missing links might look like. And of course, the face that refutes evolution is another one of these missing links that's still missing. Now, Time magazine pointed out in 1999, this was one of the things that kicked off our ministry, because I read this article and I was so shocked into realizing, hey, people need to wake up. Time magazine made it clear. Here, evolution's Big Bang. Here's the Cambrian explosion of all these incredibly complex creatures that just suddenly disappeared without a trace. They appeared without a trace. They disappeared without a trace and buried on the sea bottom. How did that happen? They say that the problem here for evolution is the oldest forms suddenly appeared already complex. There was no evolution going on. Boing, boing, all these incredibly complex, much more complex than the sea creatures today. And then they state right on the cover of the article, new discoveries show that life as we know it began in an amazing biological frenzy that changed the planet almost overnight. I got to thinking about that. Yeah, it was almost overnight. It was six nights. Or specifically on day 5 and 6 that God created all of these things that are found on the ocean bottom. In 6 days, the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them. And these extinct things were just in the wrong place at the wrong time when Noah's flood came. And we don't see them today. There's new animals that have adapted. Now, Stephen Jay Gould was a law professor at Harvard, and he's dead now. He knows the answer to his dilemma. He said, there are no missing... He was an evolutionist. He was not a creationist. But we love to quote him. Here's a great quote. There are no missing links. The whole chain is missing. He went on to say then, as Darwin was puzzled, the absence of fossil evidence for intermediary stages has been a persistent and nagging problem for evolution, because Darwin says these have to be found or my theory is not substantiated. And so Stephen Jay Gould and some others came up with a new idea, punctuated equilibrium, such as this, the first bird hatched from a reptile egg. And then what happened to the dinosaurs? A new theory, the hopeful monster theory, the last of the dinosaurs laid eggs that birds came out of. And then we take this longer. We think of the first human baby cooing and looking up into the face of her chimpanzee mummy. That's punctuated equilibrium. Now, National Geographic has never bought into that. I've never seen an article on that in National Geographic. But they stuck to the missing link theory. And in 1999, again, this was the year we started our ministry. These are things that impacted me. Archaeoraptor, the missing link between dinosaurs and birds. The article was beautiful, and it had pictures of dinosaurs growing feathers and flapping their arms and flying away. It was all based on one fossil that was found in China, and shortly after this article was published, it was found to be either a fraud or a joke from God. In the fossil record, two animals were broken apart and put back together. And nobody knows whether it was the paleontologist who put them together or if God did it in the flood to confuse evolutionists and to embarrass some. This was the body of an extinct bird fused in the fossil record with a dinosaur tail so perfectly fused that it was only identified as a fake after it was published. And National Geographic, they apologized 2 years later. What were they doing for 2 years? I believe they were looking for more missing links. They had a lot of articles about dinosaurs with feathers trying to prove that, but Archaeoraptor has not been confirmed as a real creature. So fossils, missing links, still missing, an ape man fantasy or fraud. This is very brief. Just want to review this one. The point here that we made in the message, or you'll hear next hour, is that the weight of evidence is that all of those creatures are either apes over on the left or a true man on the far right. Neanderthal man should be classified as true man, and evolutionists keep trying to fight that. But then the bottom line is that there's no scientific evidence that modern man is evolving. There is no evidence that man evolved from ape-like ancestors or any other animal, and creationists maintain that man has always been man, apes have always been apes, and there's nothing that contradicts this. And that was something that disturbed Charles Darwin greatly. In the Time magazine article in 1999 also, we see the people and apes, they aren't evolving. There's no interconnection. There's no scientific thought of, discovery of any apes and people interbreeding. And so they have a great gap there. And it says, how we got there from here. Common ancestor. Scientists believe the human and ape lines diverged between 6 million and 4 million years ago. What's the evidence? No evidence. Not a single fossil has been found. And so we see from this that human evolution in particular is a faith system. It is a strongly held to religious belief, so that when evolutionists get agitated and just go ballistic about creationists saying that creation should be in the school or the Bible should be in the school, it's because they have a religion that is strongly opposed to Christianity or anything that talks of God. Now, we need to understand that. It's a faith-based religious system. And this is one of my favorite paleontologists that dug up ape fossils. All those trees of life, Mary Leakey says, with their branches of our ancestors, that's a lot of nonsense. Remember, in this article on the upper right, see, Darwin created the tree of life, where we're all interconnected. And the field workers say that's total nonsense. It's total fabrication. There's no substantiation for that. Remember that. That's very key and important. Now, is our DNA similar to monkeys? An important question. Some of you might have this, so I thought I'd just have it here because I'm not good on statistics, so we'll get it right. It's often quoted the genome of apes and humans are 96% similar. Does this prove evolution? And this book is a good one. You can get these books on the Answers in Genesis website. I just ran out of cards, but anyway, ask Pastor Phil if you want to get some of these books. A point often overlooked is the vast difference between different kinds of creatures. Even a small percentage difference means a lot of DNA information. You understand the DNA is your four base program in all living things that has to be there before anything can happen. And so it's got all this information, and it's got a lot of information. And since human DNA has an amount of information equivalent to 1,500 page books, a 4% difference between us and monkeys is an incredible amount of, you know, so many books, encyclopedic books full of information for the differences. And so what does the Bible say? Read it with me. The Creator has said, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them have dominion over all the creatures." And that's Genesis 1:26. Right, Phil? We got to... Yeah. So the fossils, missing links still missing, ape man fantasy or fraud. Change is one of the most important things that we deal with and intelligent design in biology. Because evolution and creation are conflicting ways of interpreting the exact same evidence. We have all these living things and extinct things that used to be living, and so we classify them. There's basically a couple of different ways to classify living things. The evolutionist thinks in his mind of change over millions of years. Now, that is not the classic classification system. Classification was established by Carl Linnaeus as a creation system, kinds created separately with design and purpose, and that's still the basic outline in biology books that children should think of. It's biblical kinds, and it's hard to do it with scientific terms. But both of these are faith systems, either faith in the mind of man or faith in the mind of God. So which are you going to choose? Are you going to choose the scientists who weren't there, who don't really know, they have a theory, but they can't test it? Or are you going to put your faith in the mind of God, who was there? He was an eyewitness account. He did it. He wrote it down in a book for us to understand and to know. So which are you going to follow for science and for history? So here's the original creation. As we see Adam and Eve and everything, we see different kinds of things. Let's read Genesis 1:21 together. This is an important, important biology verse. Together. So God created every living thing that moves according to their kind. So we'll see how this pans out for biology. It's very essential to understand. Because proofs for evolution in textbooks often confuse this idea of variation with a kind with what might be called macroevolution, or that's evolving. There's evolution that goes on. That's change. But it's not macroevolution between one kind of thing that came off Noah's Ark and another kind of thing that came off Noah's Ark. So macroevolution is changing into a completely different kind. Like these birds, what did Darwin observe with the 14 finches? They aren't all drawn here. But what was he drawing here? Is that evolution? No, it's different varieties of finches. And here again we see fossil horses. Does this represent what it says in the textbook? The process of change that produces new species from existing species is called evolution. And everything on that chart is just different. There's big horses, there's little horses, and some of them might be extinct, but they're somewhere in the world. There are horses, and they put them together in a chart, and they added something from the beginning that evolutionists say is not related to horses just to make it look like a better chart. So natural selection is sometimes pictured like this, the Moths of Manchester, a very typical. This was taken out of a lot of textbooks recently because it was found out that the moths weren't really there. Somebody killed them and stuck them with pins. So, but the idea still represents natural selection. So they think. But on dark backgrounds, you have more dark moths because birds eat the white moths, etc. It's adaptation to changes in environment by environmental features, and it's variation within a species, not change into a different species. It's within moths. There's always black moths, there's always white moths, and many shades in between. This is better seen by dogs than anything else, and Charles Darwin did a lot of work with dog breeding. And so we see the Chihuahua can be bred out of Great Danes eventually, or from all dogs in the world come from kind of a wolf-like creature, they believe. But when you try to go backwards, it's a problem. The genetic information for the Chihuahua is found in the Great Dane and many other kinds of dogs that have more genetic information. But as you do natural breeding, you select out some of the information, and the information is lost. Genetic information is lost, so the Chihuahuas cannot produce Great Danes. And obviously, they don't turn into birds or butterflies. And so it's a dead end. And evolution, or the dead end process of this kind of change, which we might call evolution, is so clearly seen in the dog chart. Evolution ends at the end of every variety and cannot change into another kind. You see, the dog chart, it doesn't have any cows on it or birds. And it all comes from one ancestral dog, which is supposed to look like a wolf. And I got to get a new chart. And there should be two ancestral dogs, not just one. But anyway, you'll see those. Yeah, if there's anybody who's a vet here and has a better chart, I'd love to get it. But here's a chart you'll see in all textbooks in biology and maybe even in high school. The Drosophila fly, which is mutated by bombardment, and then it has mutations. You have curly-winged babies. You have stubby-winged babies, and you can count how many. It's fairly predictable every time. And then there's a certain number of wingless. These are caused by mutations. And the worst of all is when a fly can only think about being a fly, and that doesn't have a body. It's just a head. And so then we see the variants, yellow body and white eyes. But then what about this? This is a... this happens with humans too occasionally, where there's two heads or two bodies coming up, and it's difficult to. And now this is not really a mutation; it's a defect in the information, the assembly system. And so, is new genetic information added with two heads? Is there new information? No. The genetic information reads the same. The instructions in the DNA reads the instructions twice for the head. Something just goes wrong in there. And why God allows this, we don't know. But they say, no, there's no new genetic. We're just the same. We think different. And they might want to eat different foods. Information is damaged, not added. There is no known scientific way to add information. When they're doing genetic engineering, what are they doing? It's scientists taking genetic information from one thing and putting it into another. And that's the only way information can be added, is taking what God has already created and put it into something else. Comparative anatomy. Is it common design or evolution? Our greatest suit, in museums where they show whales, they say that the whale, they might even have pictures of this, of a land creature that fell in the water, and then its legs turned into flippers, and it somehow got really big. And we have a book at home about dolphins, and it says the same thing. It shows a wolf that somehow, it doesn't show how it changed, but this wolf-like creature changed into a dolphin. Well, that's based on this idea of comparative anatomy. But here's the problem with that. God made things, this book, the Answers book, God made things similar to show that there is one creator, but with a pattern of similarity that could not result from common ancestry. The earlier stages of embryo development differ. And so embryo development was used by an evolutionist to justify abortion over the last decades. And now this has all been debunked. But misnamed human gill slits. It goes through a fish stage. Well, that's not true. These are not gills. They are very important human functions. And here's the problem with embryonic stem cell research. Christians should not be opposed to adult stem cell research. There's stem cell research that has been proven effective. I think there's 14 cures that have been identified from stem cell research using adult stem cells. Not one even promise of a good result coming from embryo stem cell, because the embryo is designed by God to develop into a human being, and everything is set ahead of time. And scientists coax that and coax it, and they can't make it change to do something else. So here's the problem. Is that little zygote just a ball or is it a little human? It's a little human. It was discovered in the year 2000. Recent research has found that differentiation of the embryonic cells begins on the day of conception and may even be initiated at the point of entry of the sperm and the egg. So the only stem cells are those that God has programmed in our body, like cheek cells or different, and also the umbilical cord. Those cells are designed to be used by God or by us to find cures. Work cures. Philip Johnson, University of California, said in his book, Darwin on Trial, if Darwin's theory were brought into the courtroom today, it would be thrown out for lack of evidence. And he was a lawyer as he said that. And he, along with Michael Behe, initiated the intelligent design movement and the Discovery Institute in Seattle. Skeptical scientists seriously questioning the mechanics of Darwinian evolution. And in his book, he calls for scientists to reevaluate evolution. He is basically a theistic evolutionist, Roman Catholic himself. But here's a picture from one of his books, Intelligent Design Theory. The problem is Darwin never saw the intricate, irreducible complexity within the human cell. And we have food storage, shipping and receiving, power plants, protein factories, fuel refining, a network, transportation, recycling, and then we have little machines that make this and reproduce it, and little machines that make the machines, and scientists haven't even found some of the machines that make the machines that make the machines. It's just unbelievable complexity. And so he says, who is the designer? Well, we know. And intelligent design just raises the question, and creation science is pointing out that the early scientists, Sir Isaac Newton, Pasteur, anyone you know in early science believed the Bible. And even if they were or were not born again Christians, they believed that the Bible was foundational for science and history. And we need to go back to that. Oh Lord, I will praise Thee. Read it with me. Oh Lord, I will praise Thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are Thy works. And that's actually a picture of George's hand holding Phil. Oh. And lastly, I hope we'll have time for questions. I better go quicker. My wife isn't here telling me to speed up. Oh, yes. Oh, okay. Okay. The problem here is the Bible clearly shows in the genealogies a period of a few thousand years. There's no room for millions of years in the Bible. 5 days. So where do we put millions of years? Scientists just have to come up with it somewhere else. The evolution timeline says 20 billion years ago, a big bang, and millions of years of evolution. But the creationists point out that there was a creation 6,000 years ago, 4,400 years ago, a flood, which created most of the fossils that we dig up. There are many fossils still forming since then. Jesus' birth 2,000 years ago, and now we're waiting for Him to return to burn up the earth, get rid of the fossils, and make a perfect place for us to live with Him forever. Now, does carbon dating prove billions of years or millions of years? And the answer is absolutely no. Carbon dating only dates in thousands of years. And when I present this to biology departments, often the genetics professors, they say, oh yes, carbon dating is a good proof. And then I say, well, what does it measure? It measures thousands of years. And they say, oh yeah. You know, this is a spiritual battle going on. We need to give help. It only works on non-fossilized, once-living things, like an old hat. It wouldn't work on the fossilized hat because it has to be organic material. Now, here again, evidence for young Earth, the erosion rate today, the continents would erode in 14 million years, and they're obviously still around us. There's only a few thousand years of sediment on the ocean floor today. So there's no evidence there for millions of years. Human population chart, every population chart I've seen, it kind of levels off somewhere before the pyramids. It doesn't go back 3 million years like evolution says it should to monkeys or our common ancestor. The oldest living things on Earth, there's a moss somewhere in New York that's, I don't have a picture of that. It's about dated at 4,000 some years. The oldest tree, the sequoia trees, are ring dated. The oldest ring dating was 4,000 years plus. The oldest tree on Earth is a bristle cone pine. It was 4,400 years old. And what happened 4,400 years ago? Worldwide flood. So again, evidence not of evolution, but of the Bible. Evolutionists were really squawking about, you know, we're destroying the reefs and we got to be careful. Yes, we do. But it's not because they're millions of years old. This was finally ring dated and it was found to be less than 3,000 years old, the oldest reef known. And so these reefs they break, they get destroyed by tsunamis, they grow back. And as guardians of the planet, we need to take care of things but not be nuts and tree huggers. How do evolutionists date the fossils in millions of years? And someone was just asking if I would cover this, and here it is. The Grand Canyon shows all of these rock layers, right? And they have fossils in them. So scientists before Darwin and a couple of others just came up with this idea that these are like growth rings on a tree. And so then, sometime after Darwin, I think, or in that era, they counted up the layers in certain places and where fossils are found in their key layers, and millions of years were ascribed to the layers. So that's why it's confusing in evolutionist literature. Even to them, it's circular reasoning. The fossils are dated by the layers they're found in. And the layers are, if you find you go to a layer and you want to know how old that layer is, you look for what fossil is there. And you find a fossil. And if it's a 440 million year old fossil, then that's how old the layer is. So it's a circular reasoning. The fossils are dated by the layers, and the layers are dated by the fossils. And they'll admit that. But then Mount St. Helens changed the thinking of a lot of scientists when the entire side of the mountain erupted. And we came out of church on that Sunday and actually saw the plume. We were up in Tacoma. and it destroyed all of the forests and everything within 10 miles. And Spirit Lake was moved partway up a mountain, and other lakes were just lifted up on the mountains. One day, scientists, considerably after this, when we had gone to the observation point, and they said, this is an evolution showcase. We're going to see things come back millions of years, I guess. I don't know what they were expecting. But already, things were popping up just the next day after the eruption. Plants were popping up, animals popping out of the ash. And one day the scientists discovered a miniature Grand Canyon made overnight from one of these lakes. They don't even know actually where the water came from, but fast water flow cutting through solid rock in some cases, lava in some cases, a lot of ash, a lot of mud that had been compacted into almost solid rock. And so it's a fairly good canyon, and they began calling it there the miniature Grand Canyon. And we were just delighted at this. And thousands of layers revealed, which had been formed in minutes or days as the mud had been flowing down. And so it revealed to them that these rock strata of the Grand Canyon could have been formed in minutes or days or weeks, the first weeks of the flood, something like that, not representing millions of years. The worldwide flood of Noah's day could have laid down most of the Earth's fossil-bearing rock layers. And I said, there's fossils being laid down since then. Let's read this verse, 2 Peter 3:6 together. By these waters also the world of that time was deluged and destroyed. And so these are two very different interpretations. Either you believe the evolutionist idea that the sediment layers form slowly over a long period of time and the millions of layers represent millions of years. That's uniformitarianism. Creationism, on the other hand, the sediments were formed in the first weeks or so of the worldwide flood. Recent catastrophes prove this kind of layering in hours or weeks, whatever. Catastrophism is the opposite of uniformitarianism. So just a couple of examples, and then we'll end and have some questions. Evidence of recent dinosaur extinction. This one, if you were here two Sunday nights ago, Dr. Schweitzer has really been bugged by evolutionists and creationists for this, because here, she found blood cells a few years ago in unfossilized frozen dinosaur bone and meat. And, you know, they didn't even make a deal of the fact that it wasn't fossilized in the first place. But here is this blood cells Wow. Well, she couldn't account for that. Three other scientists looked at it, and they just said, well, you know, it's dinosaur. And she said on, I think it was CNN, she says, you know, all scientists know that fossilization takes millions of years, or it takes a long time. She didn't mention millions of years. She just says, we got to rethink fossilization process. Then, more recently, she discovered this. Actually, it looks like Kentucky Fried Chicken inside a fossil bone. And here also the squishy veins where she could actually move the red blood cells around. So scientists do know hemoglobin, living tissue, doesn't last millions of years. Just hemoglobin's a tough molecule. It can survive a long time, but not that long. So why do scientists mock at the flood? It's because a creationist, they say you creationists are trying to put us all under judgment. And it's a historical judgment of the flood points to a future judgment. And here's just what we use. Should I go, Pastor? What do you think? What's our time? Yeah.
Is there another microphone here?
Yeah, let's do some questions here.
We did want to give opportunity, and I think if there aren't a lot of questions, there's a couple more things my dad can show. But if you guys have questions that have been sparked about this, about particularly on the subject we're talking about, and if we have time, you can ask questions about anything related to his ministry or the mission field. I'll do my best to repeat the questions so we get it on the microphone, and we'll start up here.
Okay, the geological column used to be in all textbooks, and as I understand, almost all textbooks have taken it out. The geological column, I haven't seen one in recent textbooks. It might be if somebody knows, if you have a biology or geology book that has a geological column, I'd be interested. But the scientists and textbook writers have said, hey, there's no basis for that because it's all circular reasoning. Oh, where do we find it? Well, you see the basis of it supposedly in the Grand Canyon or Deep Canyons, but those layers are not the same in different parts of the world because we believe the flood was laid down with tsunamis and terrible catastrophes, so you wouldn't expect the same things to be buried at the same depth in different parts of the world.
What do you think about the Leviathan mentioned in Job?
Right. And the Leviathan mentioned in Job 41 is a fire-breathing dragon, and it's an ocean-going fire-breathing dragon. So creation scientists have not pinned down any specific species that identifies. It could just be the general idea in Job's mind, an ancient people of fire-breathing dragons that existed. And some of the Asian dragons that are drawn and European dragons do not sound exactly like the Leviathan found in Scripture. That was an ocean, like a plesiosaur or some creature that breathed fire in the ocean. And it is mentioned, and there are hundreds of sightings and drawings of sea serpents from ancient seafarers, and some of them recorded them breathing fire at night. So it may be, if it was a sea-going creature, it may not have been fossilized. There are not many of the sea-going dinosaurs who were fossilized because they were not they were sea creatures. Most of them survived the flood.
Yeah, the dinosaur with the red blood cells, where was that located?
Montana, in the Badlands. It's one of the most interesting geological sites on Earth. I haven't studied it a lot, but creationists are just fascinated with it because it's where you go through it. It's just unbelievable towers and things. And they found all kinds of interesting things like that. And the first one they found was something frozen. And the article just mentioned there was unfossilized blood cells. Now, I don't know if the bones were unfossilized, but it was the blood cells were unfossilized. And the same in the second one, it was blood cells inside a fossil that was found below the snow level.
Darwin pointed to the Galapagos Islands as evidence of their tree of life, how certain species could be isolated on one island. What's your opinion on
that? Yeah, I get asked about that. The scientific term is speciation, where a species or a certain variety of a creature is isolated in an area and adapts to the new natural environment around it, and some of the genes of the parents from another island or wherever it came from will be permanently lost in the process of natural selection. And so then you have a new variety or a new species identified by science. And that species sometimes will not mate with the former. But what Darwin was showing was like he got that idea from the finches. But he writes in his writings that the finches are not doing that. It was a theoretical, suppositional idea that if it happens with finches and it happens with the tortoises and these little dinosaur-like looking creatures there, marine iguanas, if it happens with them, then it must happen with the iguana turning into a bird or the finch turning into an eagle or something like that. But he never observed that, and he freely admits that. Okay. And yeah, I would say to really ask Phil, Pastor Phil, and Pastor Jerry's help on that. There's good things like John Morris has a book called The Young Earth. It's a complicated one. Much of the science literature, like the Answers book, is a good one from Ken Ham. Refuting Evolution is a good one from Ken Ham. They write it in sort of layman's terms. But just the point is that, as Pastor Phil has been preaching, in the Hebrew language, Hebrew scholars who are liberals and apostates, they freely admit that the actual meaning of Genesis 1 is that God created everything in 6 days. The only question, and it's verified in the Ten Commandments, in 6 days God created the heavens and the earth and all that is in them, and the sea and all that is in it. And it's also verified by Jesus talking about the Sabbath day and other things, that it was a literal 6 days. And so it's just a matter of, in talking to Christians, I say, you know, God says it. Apostates believe it. The devil believes that it was a 6 literal day. Why don't you believe it? That's the key. Okay.
I didn't quite understand what you were saying about creation when, like Dolly, the sheep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I didn't understand that when you were saying it.
The cloning? Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, I didn't really talk about cloning. Cloning is the only true clone that ever worked. Was Eve made from Adam. And he did it, and nobody else can do it. Scientists, they had hundreds or thousands of tries before they got Dolly the sheep. And then they were so disappointed when she died prematurely, had all these illnesses and things. Cloning is not a viable process. And there have been all kinds of misleading reports and from Korea and other places of scientists cloning humans. From what I understand, it won't happen. Only God can create life. Oh, there was one here. Well, that. No, I haven't heard that, but that's really neat. Yeah, let there be light. Yeah. She said there's some studies that the Earth may have been created through sound, and I would like to follow up on that, just find out what it's all about. I don't know. Another one here.
There's fossil evidence up in Utah, where I've been there, where it looks like a beach.
Yes.
Wow. Is that where, where did all this water go that covered the earth?
Okay.
Because obviously, I've heard that there was a water layer covering the atmosphere and it's opened up the gates of heaven.
Yes, there. Okay, where did all the water come from to cover all that? Yeah, the Genesis states very clearly most of the water came from the water reservoirs. All the springs of the earth opened up. So creation scientists and Hebrew scholars interpret that as meaning volcanic activity and the earth opening up. And before the flood, there was a natural sprinkler system all over the world, as described in Genesis. And so all of that, all those reservoirs opened up, and there was tectonic plate movement during the flood. So the continents began to take shape from the Pangaea during the flood, during the 1 year, not over millions of years. And so during that time, all this magma was coming out, water vapor was coming out, and that was going up into the atmosphere and making clouds and precipitating. And that's the only time in history that it rained continuously for 40 days and 40 nights. Sometimes in the Northwest we thought so, but the result was the entire world, including the high mountains, which weren't as high before the flood, because scientists have been able to map. I'm not even sure how they do this, but Pangaea was one continent and fairly flat, and then all of this uprising and continental divide happened during the flood and afterwards. So that's the water came out of the ground. Was that your question? Not completely flat. There were mountains, but yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Many textbooks show that, and that's scientifically verifiable. Just as the Ice Age is scientifically verifiable, except that most evolution books identify the Ice Age as taking several ice ages over millions of years. But there's the evidence for that is better explained as a single ice age and just happened about 100 years long. And Peleg?
Yes, Peleg.
Yeah, it's not clear. So interpreters are divided on that, because it could be referring to the Tower of Babel, the earth, meaning people were predestined to particular portions of the earth. You know, the different, what we call race, or what racists call races today, and identify, spread out. So it could refer to that, or it could refer to the time of the continental divide. Because what we believe, creationists believe, happened after the flood was that the water level was lower for a while because of the ice age. So there were these natural bridges. And evolutionists say the same thing. That's how animals got to Australia, for example, or came over to America. So that could have happened during that time that the earth was divided, the people were spread, divided up among people. But there was also still some tectonic plate movement and things going on at that time. So it could refer to either one. You can study that. You won't get a definitive answer. Okay.
What's the shortest bridge from debunking evolution to bringing people to a personal relationship with Jesus?
Okay. Yeah, we know that the arguments are not going to save anybody. Darwin saw all the flaws of his theory. He even wrote about many of them in his book. He didn't get saved. And if that's another question, he did not get saved. The only thing that saves a person is Jesus Christ, of course, and then we intercede as priests through prayer. And so there has to be a lot of prayer, and we have a lot of prayer for our ministry, a lot of prayer from the churches. We have learned it's vital to speak in churches before we go into the schools and universities, because early in our ministry, we found Christians from our fundamental Baptist churches doing everything they could to interfere with us coming in because they were so embarrassed. Oh, they're going to make fun of me again. You know, it was their worry. And so we just diffuse that by speaking in the churches first. And we make sure we meet the science teachers and meet with them and have them pray with us. And if they have questions, we clear them up in church. It's really such an easy, simple issue, isn't it? I mean, this is we do that. That's why we use the face that refutes evolution. There's only a few points that are in conflict. It's a worldview. It's a view of hating God that blinds their minds. But most people, most kids and teachers in the public schools in Asia want to believe in creation. So it's the power of prayer and the things that are hindering them, their fears of Christianity. And that's what it usually is. You know, we'll be coming as a fundamentalist Christian. And I have that in my in our bio data. And sometimes a Catholic priest will get all upset. So I make sure I try to talk to them ahead. And I say, we're not coming as a religious presentation. This is to show that you cannot properly interpret science and the history without the Bible. And we all believe the Bible. And Muslims believe the Bible. It's the teachings of
Moses.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't do that Sunday night, I don't think. Yeah, the bombardier beetle is a beetle that's found in the Philippines, it's found in Africa and in the tropics. It's a beetle that has an incredible complex chemical factory in it that Michael Behe, the intelligent design guy, has two or three pages of these long formulas of how it makes fire come out the end. And not just fire, but it's a fire hose. He can turn that around in any direction and shoot a blast of fiery acid that will actually burn a person or burn an animal. And we had someone in a seminar once who had a burn on her arm that she showed. She had just a couple of days earlier been burned by one of these. Now, the bombardier beetle has two sacs that combine combustible acids that it gets from eating. It eats the right food. It knows what food to eat. You know, it goes to those things, it eats them, it gets the right chemicals, and then the chemicals know which sac to go in so they don't explode. And then it collects all those two combustible things, and then it has another sac where it puts an enzyme which protects them from exploding when they come together. And then it puts those two combustible materials together so that they can't burn up yet. And then when it's attacked by an enemy on a split second, a tiny second, all this chemical reaction goes into work so that another enzyme is squirted in just as this liquid goes out the back of its body and it explodes just at the right time and just the right direction to really scare off its enemy. And so creation scientists believe as you look at skulls of dinosaurs, you'll never look at them again the same because they do have sacs in them. They have mysterious cavities, just like alligators and crocodiles do. And so we imagine that they breathe fire out of their nostrils certain ones, and that this is the basis of fire-breathing dragons. The Leviathan that was asked about earlier is a real creature. We know it was real because it's in the Bible. And the Chinese people know it's real because they see it in every Chinese restaurant. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's absolutely. It's one of the best, one of the good examples that evolution could not happen. There's no way to explain it. Even simple things like the evolution of the eye, and Philip mentioned this in a sermon once, that Darwin acknowledge that it's absurd to the uttermost to think that it happened by natural selection. And then, in the next paragraph, he explains how it happened. That's the way evolutionists, honest evolutionists, think that way. And I respect them for thinking that way. If they can say, first of all, that it's impossible, and then here's how it happened, you've got a foot in the door.
So how do they attempt to explain this?
I've never seen an attempted explanation for that. Usually they ignore those things. That's why Duane Gish has said, we want these things in the textbooks. Students and teachers should be struggling with the bombardier beetle in class because it's a classic example of why evolution can't happen. And they should be discussing it. They should be discussing it. Okay. Yeah, Phil almost straightened me out on that. Let's see if I... Do you want to answer that?
You were talking before about pure evidentialism doesn't save anyone. And if we believe Romans 1 and Romans 3 is what we were talking about, that man is willfully suppressing the truth and there's no one who seeks after God on his own apart from God's sovereign grace. We don't believe just presenting the evidence is what saves people, but we believe that as you dismantle those props and those things they're trying to suppress, and you bring up those things they're trying to suppress, and you bring the Word of God to bear, that is what God can use. And so, and you can talk a little bit about how you bring the Word of God into some of your presentations.
That's presuppositional apologetics then, and then how we do it. We do it as similar. We didn't know that the New Tribes Mission was doing the same thing. They've developed a chronological approach to Bible study, which is becoming very popular in limited access or creative access countries. And here it's presuppositional apologetics, where you just start with the history of the world and how everything came into being. And what they don't do that we add into that for... They do that with tribal people, and they don't go into the scientific details. We add in the scientific details because the only thing that was keeping me from getting saved at age 30 was all of these icons of evolution. So I had this presupposition that evolution is true, and that's what children are brainwashed with all through school. And I couldn't get it out of my head. And then suddenly along comes this book, Evolution, the Fossils Say No, and it showed me evolution isn't true, then the Bible has to be true. But the foundation of the Bible was already laid. The Usher's chronology was the Usher's Annals of the World. I have a copy of that. It's reprinted through Answers in Genesis. You can get it on their website and others. It's a fabulous presentation. He goes, I like his presentation, and he pinpoints the very day of creation. And creation scientists don't do that because we're dealing with scientific proof also. But the presupposition is there that the world is about 6,000 years old. And scientific evidence shows that the world is only a few thousand years old. So... when I do it in schools, though, I make the point of 6,000 years, the Usher chronology, we usually show that, and we talk about the 6 days of creation because most Filipinos are Roman Catholic, and then Hindus and Muslims, they need to know about the 6 days of creation. No. Okay. Yeah, talk to me. Who is that? Millions of years, probably. Yeah. Yeah, another thing similar to that, I am familiar with, there's radiometric dating is one thing that evolutionists are not talking about so much. They just give dates of millions of years, and they say we dated this by scientific method. But they basically don't. They know You take the same method and you go to maybe Glass Beach or you go to Hawaii where it's known how old the lava flows are, and they'll date it. If they don't know that it's from Hawaii, it'll date in millions or billions of years. And so that's why those dating methods are known to be something pre-programmed by God to come out. It's just the molecular characteristics that make it appear to be millions of years old. But it's not. How much time do we have?
I probably have to do one more question.
Okay.
Are there many human fossils?
Very few human fossils. And the Leakeys are one family that are still, the father's died and the son and mother are still looking for human fossils. They find ape fossils, they find human fossils in Africa, and nothing in between.
In light of the flood,
In light of the flood, we would expect no human fossils or domestic animals. We would expect very few. And so the fossils that are found are like the Cro-Magnon man, the Neanderthal man, people that lived in caves, or those in Africa that lived in flooded areas after the flood. We would not expect to find, and I don't know of any bona fide human fossils found in the record or domestic animals. Because what was happening when it started to rain? Everybody was trying to get out of there. And the animals and things that we find fossilized, dinosaurs lived in the jungles away from man generally. So that's what we find fossilized. The domestic animals and all those would be in open fields, just wiped out by water and not buried and fossilized. We would expect humans and domestic animals to die by suffocation or drowning or being eaten. Okay.
Well, thank you, Dad.